All right, welcome in, everybody. Jaguars today live in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Loggy is in the house, and oh, my goodness. Was it more fun for you watching the tape this week? It was certainly more fun for us on the post game. More fun on Jaguars today. Yesterday, I'm already having a good time. We have barely started today.
The best part was just to be able to feel the emotion from the fans in the stadium. And it's been a long time for this fan base to be able to enjoy a victory at their place in September or October. You know, and for them to be as loud and as excited as they were, even though early in that ball game offensively the Jaguars weren't doing very well, I was happy for them. And I was happy for me, being selfish somewhat, because, you know, we had a great game to call. It was fun. It was back and forth. And then to be able to close it out, to finish the game as they did in the fashion that they did, with strong defensive play from beginning to end, tremendous.
Remarkable defensive play, really, when you consider, Jeff, how many times the offense put them in a bad scenario early in that football game. And even when they took the lead, that was 7-6 for a while. It was 10-6 for a while. There was never any breathing room until the end of the football game when they forced a couple of turnovers, punched those in, finally broke that 17-point barrier. But it's nice to be able to win when the one guy who you feel has been really shining on offense, a quarterback, has his worst game in a month. Other guys filled in and stepped up their game, particularly Denard Robinson. The offensive line, I would imagine, showed up on film as well.
Well, and you bring up a good point about the quarterback, but, you know, I also want to bring this up. I mean, he did not have a good game. But when you needed him most, when you needed plays from him, at the end of the first half, he puts together a three-play drive and puts it in the end zone for a touchdown. And to me, that speaks volumes about him, because even though he's having a bad day, he has the ability to look past everything bad that's happened and still step onto the field and make plays. And to me, that much like at the end of the ball game at Tennessee, to where you're down by two possessions and you feel like you have a chance because of the play of Blake Bortles, you also feel good about Blake Bortles being a young quarterback. He's having a bad day. But did you ever one time see bad body language besides the disgust in him and himself initially after a bad play? Did you see any body language that was bad after that, the next time he was on the field?
No, he was more angry. He wasn't sulking. He was ticked.
And that's
at himself.
Key. Yeah, a lot of people don't really understand that. I mean, for the quarterback position to represent positive body language when he's having a bad day, to me, is huge, because he has the ability to have a short memory to still be a leader, which a quarterback has to be. Now, you know, this goes above and beyond, you know, the numbers and the performance and all that. But this, to me, speaks volume about a guy that's young, that has the ability to have a short memory and to still be the leader of a football team despite what he may be doing as an individual. And that was huge for me.
By the way, yesterday, Blake joined us, Denard Robinson joined us, Telvin Smith joined us, and for folks who may have missed that, go to 1010XL.com to the on-demand section. That's all available right there. Blake talked about body language and knowing how important that is. That
did he really?
Yeah, he did. And
how many young players do you think are even aware of that?
We've noticed this about him from the beginning, right? He seems to have that. The if you're going to build a quarterback with the intangible stuff, the makeup that we describe it as, he's got that in spades. He's got the talent. He's not always going to play great. And I think we all might have got sucked into it a little bit. Throws for 336, and you're like, man, this guy is just unbelievable. No running game whatsoever. He finally gets a running game, and we realize, hey, even he is susceptible to rookie ups and downs.
Well,
and that's what you had last week.
The running game had to show up. The Cleveland Browns basically came out and gave all the respect to the passing game and Blake Bortles. They played two safeties back deep, and I explained this last night on Jaguars All Access. They kept the safeties back out of the box and dared the Jaguars to run the football. I mean, I'm talking dared them to run the football. And then they did, and they were able to do that. And then in the second half, you would think that Cleveland would adjust and get a seventh guy in the box, because the Jaguars were in that 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers. So seven in the box is considered eight in a box, you know, in regular football terms. In other words, a run fortified front. And they didn't adjust. They kind of crept the safety or cheated the safety up a little bit in the second half, but they still never committed the safety to the box and stopping the running game. And that hurt them. I mean, that hurt the Cleveland Browns. And in my opinion, that's a poor adjustment by their defensive coordinator by not doing that. I mean, to me, that was a shame. But when they do that, you have to take advantage of that. And the Jaguars were able to do that. And the reason I'm so surprised that they did that, that Cleveland did that. They were missing three guys up front, two of them starters, Phil Taylor and Ataba Rubin, but then also a backup defensive end who was one of their better players who tore a knee the week before. But yet you're still going to play a weakened run front? So credit the Jaguars and Jed Fish for seeing that, identifying that, and sticking to the running game, even though that's not something that they had done very well at all prior to that game.
Even the most disgruntled, for the most part, Tony, gave some credit to Jed Fish for play calling
yes,
in this
did.
Game. It was amazing. That's the level of positivity people were feeling coming out of this one, because, you know, the play calling is always a question whenever you're not having success.
The other thing that I really took out of this game, and probably the most important thing, the second most important thing was what I talked about with body language with Blake Bortles and how he was able to kind of bounce back and have a good drive there at the two-minute drill. But there were numerous instances in that ball game where players got hurt. Okay, Allen Robinson got drilled in the chest by Dante Whitner. Luke Pawanko had an ankle injury. Posluszny had the torn pec, and Andre Branch had the groin injury. Every player, with the exception of Branch, who couldn't even walk, stayed on the field or returned to the field. And you're talking about an 0-6 football team. Okay, playoffs are out. They're not even thinking about playoffs. But an 0-6 football team that gets players that are hurt in a game, most teams, they're finding a way or trying to find a way to stay on the sideline. And you did not see that out of anybody. Heck, Posluszny tore his pec and never left the field.
Right,
he stayed on the field.
His arm's dangling. I'm laughing just because of the visual. I mean, it's a horrible break for Posluszny, but it just shows you how much that win meant to them. And they sensed it. They had this one. This game was theirs to win, and they finished it off.
But, I mean, it's just like last year, you know, and I give credit to Gus on this one because, I mean, to me, that's leadership. Last year, same kind of thing, 0-8. You come back from London, long trip, and you think, all right, they're going to pack it in, right? Well, they didn't. They bounced back and won four of their last eight with a team that really was not very good. And then this year to start 0-6, and then all of a sudden you're at home. Things aren't going great on the scoreboard. A couple guys are getting nicked up, but they're fighting to get back on the field. To me, that's a great sign.
Offensive line, just quickly, because I thought it was pretty remarkable how strong Denard ran when he had, you know, individual effort. He had some holes, but he also was able to break through arm tackles, push the pile, always falling forward, it seemed. What about the play of the line? I know you're talking about, you know, they exploited what Cleveland was setting up to try to do, but overall, as you grade these guys, we've been hard on them for a month and a half, I think with good reason for the most part. How'd they do?
Let me start with Zane Beadles. He got better. Zane Beadles got better because that's the guy that I think, you know, week in and week out, I kept saying, I want to see him get better. I want to see him get better. He's a veteran guy. They're counting on him. He got better. It was Luke Jokel's best game, I thought, yet. He was a little soft at times in pass protection. His run blocking, I think, was outstanding. I mean, strong. He's one of the best blocking left tackles that I watch. Now, pass protection, he's still got a lot to learn. Brandon Linder, wow. I mean, wow. Really good. Last week had an off game at Tennessee, his worst game, an only bad game that I've ever seen him have. He comes back, and he comes back, I mean, with a vengeance. Had an excellent game. Bowenko was good, wasn't great, but I think the ankle held back a lot of his performance because of the inability to push with that ankle. Hopefully he's going to be okay going forward. Austin Pasdor went back and had as good of a game in his first game back because I thought he took a step back against Tennessee. But overall, offensive line played very well, and it got better. Now, it could have been better. It could have been a game in which they ran for 260, 270 if it was a little bit better and a little bit crisper. But, I mean, heck, they're making progress.
Big step in the right direction overall. Jeff Logman's here with us today. Gus Bradley scheduled to join us as well coming up in 90 minutes at about 11:40 this morning. So if Coach's schedule holds up, that's when we'll get a chance to talk to him here on Jaguars Today. Hopefully he'll be willing to extend that 24-hour rule just a smidge to ask him a few questions about this past weekend's victory and look ahead to the
Miami
Dolphins.
I'm going to hold him to the 24-hour rule. I'm going to give him a hard time if he starts going back.
Oh, don't you dare. You can give him a hard time at noon, okay? You wait until then, please. Today, the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight. Here's your chance to ask the coach a question. If you could ask him one thing, what would it be? We'll try to pick one if we get a particularly insightful question, and we'll pass that along to Gus and give you credit for asking it right here on Jaguars Today. So weigh in on that on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Logs 56, at 1010XL Lauren as well. If you'd like to take a shot, and you can also go to Facebook.com/Jaguars Today. Phone lines open to you at 641-1010, and we are in session with Jeff Logan. We'll get to the loss of Paul Posluszny and Andre Branch. I almost called him Alan Branch. Who's he playing for these days, Tony? The big defensive lineman. You remember that?
Yeah, but I'm not sure.
Was he in Indy for a while? I can't recall.
Was he in Seattle?
I don't remember him being in Seattle. Regardless, I didn't say it. I shouldn't have brought it up. And we'll move on from that. 641-1010. Phone lines open to you. We'll look at the film through the eyes of Jeff Logeman today. It's Jaguars Today on a Tuesday. Victory Tuesday! That's right, I said it. Right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's a big loss. You know, he's been really playing really well lately. I think he's really come into his own, really understands the defense now, really takes total command of the defense. So that'll be a difficult one. You know, we've got some guys that will step up. That's what this league's all about. You know, I think we'll be okay.
All right, ZZ Top Cheap Sunglasses. It's the theme is due to beards today. What do you think?
In honor of last night, Fitzpatrick v. Kiesel.
Could be. Could be.
Kiesel's got the best beard I've ever seen.
It's pretty tremendous. Oh. Yeah, it's pretty tremendous. Although Fitzpatrick, for a quarterback,
yeah, but he looks like Mountain Man. I mean, Kiesel actually has like a little Santa Claus-esqueness to it.
Yeah?
You know what I mean? Where it's got the waves, and it's groomed, and it looks good. He even breaks out a little wax on the stash. Kiesel's like the best beard that has ever.
That's because who's he?
I'm jealous because I can't grow anything even close to that.
Is he a Head and Shoulders guy? I mean, he's got some endorsement because of that. I've seen him at the Super Bowl. He shows up at the Super Bowl.
He should have some kind of beard shampoo endorsement.
I think he does actually, because he goes to like media day on behalf of some company, and he records interviews as, you know, the interviewer with different players at the Super Bowl. At least he has the last couple of years.
Probably one of those like butch wax things for
beer.
Right?
I don't know who it is. Maybe. All right, enough of that. Gus Bradley talking about the loss of Paul Posluszny.
What was the name of that? What was that name of that movie where they had the Dabbity Doo, whatever it was? The
Dippity Doo.
Oh, it was Dapper Dan.
Dapper Dan.
It was Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, one of the best movies ever.
I love that movie.
I never saw it.
You never saw that?
It's the Coen Brothers with
Dempsey,
Clooney.
I see it like on TNT. I see it for like 5 minutes. I'm like, this is awful.
The soundtrack is worth its weight in gold.
I'll buy the soundtrack. Buy the album then.
I love that movie.
Just so you know, that's not the music theme today.
You guys are
not about beards.
Over here. Stop. It's not about beards?
It's not about beards. I was going to let y'all go for a while.
We wasted 90 seconds of everyone's life then.
I love it. And I love that movie.
Paul Posluszny, Jeff, on IR, next man up and all that, but how big of a loss truly is this now?
Huge. I mean, huge. And I know that, you know, the next man up philosophy is what you say.
Right.
But there's no next man up that's going to be able to play at his level. You know, so you're getting weaker at two positions. That's just the reality of it. JT Thomas will go in at the Mike position, you know, Dakota Watson, and or Leroy Reynolds will go in at the auto position. But JT has given you a huge upgrade at the auto position. Posluszny, you know, he does have shortcomings in coverage at times. Sometimes he's very good. But, I mean, you're talking about the captain of the ship. I mean, the guy who gets everybody lined up, that takes control of the huddle, that gives you consistent effort, and who is an absolute run-stuffing machine. I mean, in fact, next week for Film Room Friday, I will probably go back and just show people how good Paul Posluszny actually is. But, you know, I want to let them kind of see what it looks like in his absence a little bit first.
Right.
But, I mean, he's so good. He never gets knocked off his feet. He always beats the blocks to the point. In the running game, his fits are always perfect. The only weakness that he has, and it's not really a weakness, but it's not a strength, is pass coverage awareness and zone. But you don't find guys that just can step in and take over that role. Now, I'm excited to watch JT Thomas because here's a guy that they got basically off the street. He has really shown that he's become a better player because his activity, his awareness, and his speed is so much better than what it was. When JT Thomas first got here, he was not the best in shape linebacker that I had ever seen. So the transformation that he had made from last year to this year has been tremendous. The only reason he was not in the starting lineup on opening day this year was the injury that he had in the preseason. And it almost took him out for the entire preseason. So that was unfortunate for him. But I'm looking forward to watching him. And I hope that he can replace the communication that Paul Posluszny provided, because in the first 4 weeks of the season, that was an issue in the back end. And they kind of got that fixed. Well, will it be an issue now up underneath with that group of linebackers and the communication with the back end? We'll have to wait and see.
Andre Branch, 6 week injury. You never know, right? It could be longer than that. So it's big, significant portion of the remainder.
It's not
going to
be shorter
season
than that.
Right. So maybe it's the rest of the year, but at least for the next month and a half, what do they do in his absence?
I'm not as concerned about Andre Branch's absence. I'm concerned because Andre Branch has gotten much better. His effort, if you're going to compliment Andre Branch on one thing that I really like, that I've become a fan of his, he's made me be a fan of him, is his effort. He goes 100 miles an hour on every snap. He has gotten more stout in the running game. He still sometimes has some imperfections in his pass rush. He doesn't still have the ability to play with bent knee power. But that he just doesn't have that part of a game. But everything else he has made a strength to overcome that one shortcoming that he may have. But his effort. I love watching players that play with effort and play with attitude. And Andre Branch has effort and attitude. And they've had many packages to where him and Chris Clemons are on the field at the same time, and they're both held up in the run very well. And that's the biggest improvement that Andre Branch has made, is his play in the running game and how stout that he's been. But how do you replace him? Ryan Davis. Ryan Davis, I've said this all along and kind of had a little bit of debate with different people about, if you had to make a decision between Andre Branch or Ryan Davis, who would it be? You know, and that's an interesting question, right? And, you know, most people would say Andre Branch. And to me, that's a hard decision to make, because Ryan Davis has is extremely athletic and has athletic power. So I think he's going to be more than capable to fill in that role. But then again, once you get to the Lightning package, you're missing 25% of your Lightning package
right now.
You know, so what do you do now at the Lightning package? You know, the regular downs I'm okay with. Ryan Davis is strong. He can play the Leo. He's athletic. He's going to make a lot of plays. But now how do you replace Brancher when you go to that Lightning package? Will it be Dakota Watson in place of Andre Branch, or will Ryan Davis move out to Branch's spot, and then maybe Chris Smith comes into that three technique? I think we'll have to wait and see. But if I had to guess, Dakota Watson gave them some quality snaps when Branch came out in that ball game. So I think Dakota will get snaps in that nickel Lightning package, and then Chris Smith will sub in occasionally.
Chris Smith brought up, obviously, from the practice squad yesterday, for those who may have missed it. 641-1010, the number if you'd like to get on board. Jeff Logman is here on Twitter as of the last few weeks, at Logs56, L-O-G-S-5-6. Let's welcome Jim in Ponte Vedra first up today on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Actually, I'm not in Ponte Vedra. I'm in North Carolina, but it's always nice to listen to you guys. But real quick, a couple questions. Two Jaguar questions and then an NFL question for Jeff. Well, let's do the NFL question first. Luke Kuechly thrown out of the game the other day. I mean, it's a scrum in the NFL. And, you know, was it an overreaction by the referee? That's my first question. And then the second question, well, the other question I have for those to do the Jaguar question was, Cinderic Marks towards the end of the game was really getting into it with Paul McQuiston. I don't know what the deal was, but, I mean, guys were holding him back. And I didn't know. We couldn't see anything from the stands, but I just didn't know whether Jeff saw something on the broadcast or whatever when he was, you know, dealing with it, that he saw that nobody else said. And I'll take your answers off the air. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Jim. And to answer the first question, personally, I think the NFL should be like hockey, in that, you know, if a guy gets into a little bit of a scrum, you make them sit out for a certain amount of time on the game clock. If they want to go ahead and throw punches on guys that are wearing helmets and face masks or getting into altercations, fine. Unless it's something that where it's putting a player at risk health-wise, it's a cheap shot. To me, that's an automatic ejection. But if it's a scrum, it's an emotional game. Make it like hockey and give them like 5 minutes of game clock to where he has to sit out of the game. my opinion on that.
Okay.
Now, Senderic Marks, the reason that Senderic was so fired up about McQuistan is because he was absolutely kicking the tar out of Paul McQuistan the entire game. I mean, wearing him out like a rented mule. And then all of a sudden, Paul McQuistan has him where he's got a hold of his jersey in the armpits area, and Senderic gets tripped up by somebody else's legs, and then McQuistan goes to bury him to the ground. And so I understand Senderic's reaction is, that I'm kicking your you-know-what the entire game, and you're going to bury me on one play and try to act like you've done something.
Because somebody took my
legs
out.
When I'm wearing you out like a rented mule.
Yeah.
And that fired him up.
And, you know, we talked about it last week. What would the absence of Alex Mack mean? How big of a deal was that? Right?
I mean, huge. Alex Mack is one of the best centers in the National Football League, if not the best. McQuistan is a journeyman. He was here. He's got no feet. You know, he can't move. Greco is an inadequate replacement for Alex Mack at center. You know, he's a decent player. But just like Posluszny, you know, and I'm not saying it's going to be to this dramatic of an effect with the Jaguars defense, but you can't replace a Pro Bowl player. And Mike Pettin, I think, said it best, and it kind of surprised me. I think eventually they're going to make a different change along their offensive line. They've got a guy that's coming back from a wrist injury, and they'll put that guy who they got off of waivers from San Diego in at center, and then they move Greco back to guard to where they've just weakened one position now instead of two, because you really – and see, Tom Coughlin used to do that back in the early days. If you had one injury along the offensive line, he would play musical chairs with them because of one injury. And I never believed that that was the way to do it. Because you weaken other positions instead of just weakening just one.
Right.
So they'll probably go back once they get that other guy available.
Hey, give McQuistan credit. It's not often, you know, a guy with no feet can play in the National Football League. So, you know.
Well, I mean, there's different levels. And, you know, him, he's obviously on an NFL roster, and so he deserves the respect. But at the same time, he's not a great player.
I hear you, brother. Let's get back to the phone line, 641-1010. Robert, you're next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I just have, Jeff, two questions. What is the difference between zone blocking, gap? I don't exactly understand it. And do the Jags re-sign Roy Miller?
Two good questions. To answer your second one first, Roy Miller, do they re-sign him? Absolutely. Good football player. That position is not a high price tag for a nose tackle position. So I think he's back. And also let me add to that. This week on Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com, I'm doing a feature on his backup, who had, in my opinion, the best game maybe of any defensive lineman, and that's Avery Jones. Avery Jones was tremendous.
He's been coming on.
He's been fantastic. And he is a guy last year that I was sitting there kind of wondering, what is Dave Caldwell seeing this guy? But Dave Caldwell was able to see Avery Jones' pre-ankle injury at Georgia in his second to last year at Georgia. I don't know if that was his junior year or sophomore year. I'm not sure if he came out early. But he knew from watching Avery early on that he had talent and was patient with him last year, keeping him on the active roster, knowing that he could develop into something. And Avery has become sudden, which is a change from last year. Avery was kind of plodding. This year he's sudden, he's quick, and he's moving extremely well. Now, do you remember the Telvin Smith interception, obviously?
Sure.
Who got the pressure?
I'm guessing it's Avery Jones.
Avery Jones. Avery Jones went into the feet of Brian Hoyer. Brian Hoyer can't follow through, makes the ball go behind. The ball's tipped up into the air. Telvin Smith makes the interception. So you got to give Avery Jones for credit on that play. Now, the second question, refresh my memory again. You too?
Yeah, I lost it too. I was
gap scheme versus zone scheme.
There you go.
Okay. I haven't had that many hits.
Warren just goes, yeah. where were you? Just weighing in on your own.
I was going to tell you, but then you got it.
All right.
A zone blocking scheme is when all five guys are moving in synchronized movement or as all together. And so they're more blocking an area. So they go to an area and see who shows up into an area. So it's almost as if you take your hand and put all four fingers on the table and you just move it without moving any fingers. They all go together. And then they just pick up whoever shows up, because most teams play a gap control defense, and eventually somebody's going to show up into that gap, and then they block who shows up.
Okay.
A man blocking scheme or a gap blocking scheme, and it's, the gap blocking scheme probably isn't the proper term, but it's more of a man blocking scheme, means you're blocking this guy no matter where he goes. And sometimes that is more difficult. When you zone block, sometimes what you can do is actually you're moving the gaps with a zone blocking scheme, and a lot of times you can have guys displace a gap by 2 to 3 guys just because of the speed of that synchronicity of moving along the line of scrimmage, and it can create bigger holes instead of trying to move bodies out that are attacking one specific point. Hopefully that's somewhat understandable.
Hope you got that. All right. Well, if not, Lauren will refresh you later on that. 641-1010. If you're on the line,
gap
stay right there.
Gap is blocking an area.
All right.
Your zone,
all right,
sorry, is blocking an area. The gaps are the in between the guys, and the man is then you're blocking a man. Makes
that's
perfect
why you
sense.
Listen to Helmets and Heels every Tuesday night right here on 1010.
No, that's why you listen to Logman.
92.5 FM. More of your calls coming up at 641-1010. Don't forget today, you can weigh in on the fan feedback spotlight. What one question, if you had the opportunity, would you ask head coach Gus Bradley? And maybe we'll ask that question for you coming up in a little over an hour. Gus scheduled to join us at 11:40 this morning right here in studio. We're live at Everbank Field in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, and Lauren Brooks on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history is brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. On this date, October 21st, 1966, the United States Congress approved the AFL-NFL merger, I guess, into one league. They didn't merge into the NFL. I guess they approved their cross-pollination of the championship game to be known as the Super Bowl. But they didn't formally merge until 3 years later.
Thanks, what? Congress. Why are they involved?
I don't know. It must be some antitrust type situation. It's got to be something like that. Shakes his head. Jeff Logman.
If they had said
does.
No, would they have said, all right, our champs are going to play an exhibition game?
Perhaps so. That could have been the case. 1973, Fred Dreyer, remember him?
Great player.
Became the first NFL player to record 2 safeties in a single game as the Rams defeated the Green Bay Packers. My generation knew Fred Dreyer as Hunter on TV in the 1980s. I saw this little blurb about him after reading that. He was taken as the number one pick of the New York Giants. And he would play defensive end for 13 years, a Pro Bowler, finished his career with 104 unofficial sacks. He retired the season before sacks became an official statistic, but going back over the film, I guess that's how many they credit him with. And then after football, check out how they describe Stephanie Kramer. He starred opposite the, quote, hot for the 80s Stephanie Kramer in Hunter, a hit show from 84 to 91, and would later be on a TV show called Land's End. So there you have it.
80s hot. She was 80s
Stephanie
hot.
Kramer was 80s hot back in the day. That's brought to you by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. Their mission to fabricate and install the highest quality product for you at a competitive price while providing unsurpassed customer service. Give them a call for a professional free estimate at your convenience at 268-1638 or simply visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
San Francisco 49ers center Daniel Kilgore will be placed on injured reserve and miss the rest of the 2014 season after he suffered a broken bone in his left leg during the team's Sunday night loss to the Denver Broncos. The St. Louis Rams, as we mentioned, have released wide receiver Austin Pettis. Pettis was apparently late for a team activity over the weekend, but according to Rams head coach Jeff Fisher, they made that move to clear a roster spot for something else they are planning on doing. What that something else is remains unclear, but there has been some speculation that the Rams could be looking to trade running back Zach Stacy, who was active on Sunday but played only one snap in the game for St. Louis. A.J. Green and his big toe continue to improve. The latest out of Cincinnati is that A.J. Green has made significant progress and could be back on the field for the Bengals on Sunday. They were shut out by the Colts 27-0 this past weekend. Did you see your boy, by the way, Troy Polamalu, last night on Monday Night Football? He was at it again, Jeff, leaping over that line of scrimmage.
You love that move.
And I was telling you guys when we were talking about it earlier.
Yeah.
The Jaguars had an offensive line coach here. His name was Paul Boudreau. And Paul was the coach of Brad Meester when Brad had what I call his nasty days, to where he was playing with a little chippiness. I guarantee you that if Troy Polamalu were to ever play against a Paul Boudreau offensive line, that he would have given specific instructions. If Troy Polamalu ever comes flying across the line of scrimmage, it needs to become a dog pile at that point. And Troy Polamalu would get his rear end stomped by five offensive linemen.
Why don't we see that? Because fines, penalties. I mean, last night you're in a situation with Houston on the 2-yard line. The penalty gives them the ball at the one. You get a 15-yard penalty, obviously, that's working counterproductive. They needed two scores late in that game.
Like I said, you know, I mean, you kind of went back and forth on this a little bit. I mean, to me, it's a safety issue when you're doing that.
Then the league needs to outlaw it.
And that's my complaint is with the league. You know, the league needs to address that. If a guy's going to go flying across the line of scrimmage like that and put guys with head and neck area at risk, you know, to me, that needs to be an issue.
I have no qualms with that. If the league wants to outlaw that or address that or change how they do that whole thing, but until they do, I personally don't have any qualms with Troy Polamalu trying to take advantage of
don't have any qualms with an offensive line
that's fine
to retaliate.
You can do that. I have no qualms with them getting the appropriate fines and or penalties, what have you.
Some things are just worth it.
Well, and that may be the case. I get it. Look, I totally get where you're coming from on that. Here's a question that just came in on Twitter for you. I think I know the answer, but I think they'd rather hear what you have to say about it. Why not move Geno Hayes in to the middle and get Telvin on the field more, an outside linebacker in the base defense, develop him into an every down backer? My guess for one is that Geno's not really big enough to play the middle. He's about 225. You look at JT Thomas, probably about 10 pounds heavier than that. They tried Leroy Reynolds in there a little bit, and he's even bigger than that. He's probably in the 240 range or 245 range.
I think the biggest thing is who's had repetitions there before. Before JT was moved to the auto, he was playing Mike. And in the preseason, he had maybe an MVP type of game in the preseason where he was the Mike. And that was like right before the end of the preseason. It might have been against the Atlanta Falcons where you're like, wow, this guy really brought it. And when you play the mic, you've got to be able to have a great understanding and confidence in that guy that he's going to run the ship. He's going to be the captain. And I think JT's got a really good understanding. If you end up taking Geno and moving him to Mike, then who do you move to the Will or the weak side linebacker
right
position? So it's a natural fit for JT, and he can handle it. He's probably a little bit more physical than Geno. And he's also JT's gotten snaps there. You know, whereas Geno has been specifically a weak side backer.
And JT, he came in at the auto position basically 3 weeks ago now, and the defense, that's when it made its turn. And I don't think that those two things are dependent of each other. I think it does have something to do with the fact that JT Thomas has been on the field more.
Absolutely. I mean, he actually had a really good game at the auto position this past week. Now, the first week that he moved to that auto position and the defense got better, it really wasn't because of JT, because they played, I can't remember which team it was, maybe San Diego,
when
he was moved to that auto position. And San Diego played three wide receivers, so the auto wasn't even on the field in that game.
Right.
But the week after that against Tennessee, and then also here against Cleveland Browns, he improved that positional play in a big way.
All right, let's get back to the phone, 641-1010. Ken, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How y'all doing?
Great. What's up?
This isn't the glamour position, but does our wonderful third round punter just have no ability to control his leg and pin people back into the, you know, instead of having everything go as a touchback for him? I know we got a couple lucky deals and a punt off a face mask. That guy shouldn't even ever try to catch the ball because it would have gone in the end zone. I just feel like we do a horrible job of taking advantage of, you know, what supposedly is a great kicker. And he's just not doing a good job. Is it just me, or am I right?
No, I think you're right. You know, that's the one thing that, you know, he has a big leg, and at times he just crushes the ball. But then there are times that you go, okay, you know, you were drafted high, and I know you can't look at it from that perspective, but he's got the talent, he has the ability, but you want to see him become more consistent. A lot of times in pregame, you watch him kick balls, and the ball's turning over, and it's going 60 yards. And then when he gets to the game, that point of that ball never truly turns over, and he lacks the distance. But now, if you look at him ranking-wise, he's still in the upper half of the National Football
League. He's 12th in net punting right now.
But his inside the 20 has to improve. And I wonder, you know, he does that Australian rules kind of end-over-end kick. When he's farther back, though, a lot of times it rolls into the end zone, and you wonder, why doesn't he directional kick towards the pylon more in that situation? But I agree, and then I want to see him become a consistent weapon, and so far he has not.
Right now he's got 10 punts down inside the 20, which is middle of the pack, right in the middle of the league. But he's also had the most punts in the league.
Right.
So he's had the most opportunities to pin teams inside the 20.
Yeah, he hasn't been bad, but you just get the feeling that he's capable of more, and you want to see that production result in better field position for the defense, which results in better field position for the offense.
Jeff Logman here, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, 641-1010, if you'd like to get on board and get in here. Secondary, I haven't talked about them really today. I thought there were, at times, certainly there were a couple of blown plays, but there were at times when Hoyer was thrown downfield that I thought the coverage was just very good.
Probably the best it's been.
Yeah.
Best it's been.
Is that as a result of what they were able to do up front, get them into more predictable kind of down and distance? They kind of knew what to expect because they weren't able to run the ball effectively and get ahead of the chain, so to speak.
Yeah, when you get to obvious down and distance situations, then it takes away the ability to run that play action. You know, I mean, Brian Hoyer is a play action quarterback.
You said that on the pregame show that if he doesn't have that, he doesn't have much.
No, and that really showed to be true because he was no longer a play action quarterback. So, I mean, you take away the strength of a football team, then the defense can be at their best and be at their strength, which is having the ability to know exactly what the play is going to be, and it's going to be a drop-back pass. But, you know, still, nonetheless, the coverage got better. You can tell that Demetrius McCray, and with his play and the competition with Dwayne Grotz, it has made both of them better. Jonathan Cyprian, who had a couple eye violations at Tennessee, was tremendous in this past game. His tackling was sure. His coverage was outstanding. Never once did I ever see him bite up on a fake. Some of that was to do with the down and distance. Josh Evans had a very good game. Alan Ball continues to be consistent, and I think he actually got better. You know, the one guy that has definitely improved is Dwayne Grotz because he's been rolling in, and maybe he got a big piece of humble pie getting replaced by Demetrius McCray after he came back from that concussion, and he said, okay, I'm not good enough. I need to earn the right. But the other thing, too, that's impressed me about Grotz is because he's rotating with Demetrius McCray, he was asked at times to be a gunner on punt coverage team, and they kind of rotated him and Demetrius McCray as the gunner. The other one's always Jordan Todman, and Todman's always good. I mean, the guy's got great straight line speed, good gunner. But Grotz was very good as the gunner. I'm talking exceptional as the gunner. And it's always good when you have a guy who lost his position, his starting job on defense, and then he said that he's basically told, okay, guess what you're going to do now? You're going to be on special teams. And then he embraces it and goes 100 miles an hour with it. You know, I think that's another example, much like I talked about with the grit, the guys getting hurt and coming back. To me, that's a reflection of the coach.
Jeff Logman's here. When we return in a moment, Jeff, we'll talk about Chris Clemens. Sacks in three consecutive games. Sometimes a misleading stat. We'll ask you if he's playing as consistently as that would indicate. And as well, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, brought to you by the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships. We asked you if you could ask Gus Bradley one question. What would it be? We may ask that question for you. Coming up in about 30 minutes, Gus scheduled to join us at 11:40 this morning on Jaguars Today here in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey with your JTEC drive of the game. Jacksonville took over the football with 1:33 remaining in the first half, trailing 6-0 after stopping Cleveland on 4th-and-1. Blake Bortles hit Allen Robinson and Clay Harbor on back-to-back passes. Following an offsides penalty on the Browns, Jacksonville was set up at the Cleveland 31.
Two receivers plus the tight end to the right. Cecil Shorts alone to the left. Todman, the running back, to the left of Bortles. He's in a shotgun. Straight drop. Four-man rush. It's only a three-man rush. Bortles fires it out to the right side. That's caught inside the 20-yard line. Allen Robinson still on his feet. Inside the 5. Inside the 10. Touchdown, Jaguars! Robinson got away from a tackle, and the Jags are on the board. A 31-yard touchdown pass.
The ensuing extra point gave Jacksonville its first lead of the game, 7-6, a lead they'd never relinquish as they go on to a 24-6 victory. The drive of the game has been brought to you by JTEC, a new automotive, diesel, and truck driving school here in Jacksonville. JTEC is driving the next generation of under-the-hood and over-the-road technicians and transportation professionals.
Him to bounce back and handle the 2 minute like he did, that is not surprising. In the game, I think he has a short memory as far as that. I think he gets by it and moves on really quickly. I think after the game and today, he kind of goes through it, you know, and he kind of challenges himself, what could I have done better?
All right, ranking the podium pounders right now. A little bit there from Gus. Jed Fish is the clear leader in the clubhouse.
Yes.
Bob Babich is a strong number two, though. Doesn't get his opportunity at the mic as often, but he will pound the podium as well.
Now you got to explain to people what you mean.
Thumping. I mean physically pounding on the podium.
You hear the thumping.
When you're, yeah, with Jed Fish, he apparently chops it. And it's chop, chop, chop to emphasize his point. And you hear, yeah, like that. Right. Exactly. Jeff Logman.
I did notice that with Babich last week.
Yeah, right? It was. Last week, I thought he was maybe...
Actually, he was talking about the Babich Bowl.
Yeah, he's picking up on Jed Fish's tendencies with that. But Gus Bradley, they're talking about Blake Bortles and the confidence they have in him in the two-minute drill. We've seen it on display several times this year. Jeff talked about it.
All right, so let's do a little
today.
Bit of a test. The next time that you hear Jed Fish and Bob Babich at the podium, let's see how they do.
In terms of... pounding the podium.
Yeah.
Why, are you going to bring it up to them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, any kind of ammunition like that, to have a little fun with them?
Yeah. I don't know if Fish can contain himself. I'd be shocked if he can eliminate that from, because you could ask him what you have for lunch today. Well, the tuna fish sandwich. He's like, he goes strong. Probably.
By the way, your podium pounding right there, just turn my computer back on. Way to go.
There you go. It worked for you. By the way, that would, I'm sure, be a dandy tuna fish sandwich. Thank you very much for cross-pollination there. Chris Clements, 3 sacks in the last 3 games, or 1 each week. Not always an indicator of great all-around play, but is it in his case? Is he really starting to come on?
He's been pretty consistent throughout. He hit a stretch there, the Washington game. He didn't play very well. San Diego, I didn't think he played very well. And then after that point, he started to play better. So, yes, he has played better. He's been more consistent. The biggest improvement that he's made is in the running game. I thought he was not super soft, but soft at times prior to the last 3 weeks. And I know as one of the leaders, one of the guys, Gus Bradley talks about, guys that need to step up, and guys have been saying things and challenging guys. When you do that, you've got to be able to back it up. In other words, you have to have a level of play at a certain level before you can do that. And I think that Chris identified that and knew that he needed to pick up his level of play in order to be able to be one of those podium pounders, when he talks to the guys. and he's gotten better, and he's not a young man anymore, but, he still plays the game at what I would call kind of with a young man's body. He doesn't show signs of age. When you typically see a guy like this week watching the Miami Dolphins, Randy Starks, nose tackle, defensive tackle, played for many years for the Tennessee Titans, signed a big free agent deal to go with the Miami Dolphins, 10th, 11th, 12th year, something like that for the Miami Dolphins. And watching him on film, I'm just sitting there watching him going, he's getting old. And you can kind of tell because the knee bend's not quite there, the quickness is not quite there. But with Chris Clemens, I don't see that. And so that's a good thing for the Jaguars because he's got a multi-year deal, and he may end up giving them more years maybe than most guys at that age do.
Find out if he can continue beyond this season to be a key part of that rotation.
One of the big things with him, I can remember 4 or 5 times just off the top of my head where he kind of lost contain on the backside on a cutback run, and that was probably the issue that you're talking about against Washington, playing soft against the run. Was that there? I was worried about it going into the game against Cleveland because they did that a lot. Ben Tate made a lot of big plays coming back the other way, pressing the front and then making that cutback.
He was real good on the backside. Real good on the backside. The only guy that had one issue, and there was only one issue the entire game on the cutback run, and I think it was on that 18-yarder that Ben Tate had, which was the only good effective run that that they had for the most part. And Tyson Alualu, they had the big guys on the field. He was the backside guy, and he got cut by a wide receiver. That was it. Other than that, not one time did a backside guy get cut.
What could he have done differently on that play?
Tyson?
Yeah.
When you take on a cut block or you have a small guy and it was a wide receiver, you know he's not going to block you up high, so you've got to be able to get ready and get your hands down and bent kneed and get ready for it.
And kind of like move your lower body away to kind of avoid getting a shot
like
at your legs.
If I'm sitting there and I've got five softballs, four in my left arm and one in my hand, and I'm going to tell you that I'm going to throw them at your shins, and you have to basically shuffle down this line, what are you going to do? You're going to get down, and you're going to be ready to protect your shins at that softball that I'm going to throw at your shins, right, so you can knock the ball away. You have to have the same mentality when you're a defensive end, and you've got a little 5 foot, 875-pound, wide receiver. He ain't going to block you high. You know he's going to take you low, and you just have to have the awareness. And so your body's in a position that it's ready for that. And Tyson kind of turned his body sideways instead of keeping his shoulders a little square to where he could put his hands down.
Gus Bradley scheduled to join us in a little over 15 minutes today. The Fan Feedback Spotlight asked you if you could ask Gus one question. What would it be, Tony? What are some of the questions that we got?
Here's what we got from Stevie. Is there any one memory that sticks out above all others from last year's season? From Punisher, what has surprised you the most about this season? Maybe a specific position group or player, or the 1-6 start. From Will, how often does he shave his dome? From Jags Press Box, can you maintain the upward trend on defense without Puz? From Eric, Coach, how do you coach and develop someone to take over once someone like Puz goes down? From Jason, will you call my wife and wish her a happy anniversary? It would help me out later on.
I'm guessing no.
From Adari, we got, how were you able to get a team to play with so much grit, determination, and confidence after being 0-6? Christoph, where did the We Believe in Victory chant come from? I like that one. From Robbie, what are you going to do at running back with the game that D-Rob and Toby coming back?
There are a few more in there as well, and we'll get to one or two of them when Gus joins us if we have time for that. This one from Jonas on Facebook. When Mercedes Lewis returns, will Clay Harbor be used strictly as a backup tight end, or could he be utilized on the field at the same time, i.e. the H-back? We've seen now, Jeff, you've been calling for this, go to more three wide, one tight end with the running backs, spread out the defense a little bit more, try to create some running lanes in that regard. They use that a lot more this week. Do you expect to see a lot more of that going forward now?
Yes. And if you ask them, they would say, well, it's kind of dependent upon what type of defense they're running, how they would approach things. But if you have, to kind of answer the question that on Facebook, there, when Mercedes comes back, will Clay Harbor go to being a backup? Yeah, he'll be a backup, but they'll also utilize him on the field with Mercedes Lewis as they did before. But right now, I think that 11 personnel is really the ticket because it allows them to get their best players on the field. Is Will Tofoe a best option with a fullback and regular personnel? I think he's an excellent fullback, and I'm not trying to criticize Will, but I would criticize more that it's better to spread them out and give more open running lanes to a running back like Denard Robinson than it would be to keep everything tight because Denard runs so much better when he's kind of in space. But I think that's going to be the most interesting thing to watch from this point forward for the Jaguars offensively is do they stick with that personnel grouping as their bread and butter, as their core philosophy or their core personnel grouping, because it worked so well this past week. And even though Blake Bortles did not have a great game against the Cleveland Browns, I still maintain that he's their best player on offense. And it would allow him to continue to make plays as the best player by spreading the team out.
In terms of Denard, and this is one of the questions I think under consideration for Gus, do you feel, is 22 carries, most by far that he's had in his career, can he maintain that workload? And if that's the case, when Toby Gerhardt is fully healthy, what are the roles for these other backs behind Denard, presuming he continues to hold that spot?
Well, I think he can handle 22 carries a game, but you got to be able to have the type of game that says, okay, we can run the ball 22 times. and they were able to do that against Cleveland because the defense was so good. It gave them that many more opportunities on offense, and then the score dictated that you could continue to run the football. You know, will it be 22 every week? No. You know, probably 15 to 18 is probably going to be about your average if he's going to continue to be the first and second down guy. I think Toby Gerhardt has lost the first and second down job. I mean, I think it, when he comes back, he's probably going to be the third down back, much like he was in Minnesota backing up Adrian Peterson.
We've talked about that in recent weeks, you know, that if they found a guy, whether at one point maybe Storm Johnson was going to be the guy that emerged, and if they found a guy that sees the reins, so to speak, that Toby could be utilized that way, because we've seen him excel in that role before.
If Toby comes back and he gets a sprinkling of carries on first and second down, and then he starts to show, that he's running the ball well, then maybe all of a sudden he starts to chip away.
Right.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get one more in before we break here. 641-1010. Tim, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Morning. Hey, question for Jeff. Has he ever been asked to coach, and would he ever be interested in coaching? And I'll take your answer off the air.
All right, thank you, Tim.
Yeah, good question, Tim. Yes, I have coached flag football. And
what was your record?
We did pretty well. Do I have an interest in coaching? No. I love what I do right now. I mean, I love doing the radio, the television, the games, website, sitting in here with you. I mean, to me, I'm happy as I can be.
And as you said, it gives you the freedom to do, you like the way the lifestyle
I got different passions.
You said you might go out and try to kill something later today.
Yeah, I might have an opportunity to go sit in a deer stand today. So, it's all good. When you coach, you ain't doing that.
There you go. Jeff Logman, Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey here. By the way, the Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you today and every day by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking fans, what drives you the next time you're in the market for a new or pre-owned vehicle? Check out one of the family of dealerships, including Tom Bush Volkswagen, Tom Bush Mazda, Tom Bush BMW, and Tom Bush Mini. You can follow them all online at tombush.com and on Twitter at Tom Bush Motors as well. The Fan Feedback Spotlight, one of those questions will be posed to Gus Bradley, provided he stays on schedule. Scheduled to join us about 10 minutes from now, so let's step aside. We will return, hopefully, with the head coach of your Jacksonville Jaguars, Gus Bradley, right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
They're professionals, and they're grown men, and they know what the NFL is all about. But I think there's a part of me that was really excited for them. They stayed so true to our message and fought so hard for it, and just really disciplined on it and never wavered, practice every day hard. Just to see it come through and see how excited they were, I think that was so fulfilling for our whole staff, I think.
Gus Bradley talking about, loosening up, celebrating it. He said, we're not supposed to revel in these. We're going to revel in this one, and I think that's absolutely fine. I think that resonates greatly with the fan base. As a player, Jeff, I understand what he's saying. You're a professional. This is your job. You should expect to win, if you do the things that get you there. But, when they've been through what they've been through in terms of not winning at this point, some of them do taste a little bit better, don't they?
I've always said this, and that coaches always want you to feel the pain and the suffering of defeat, right? But then they want you to have this 24-hour rule for victory.
Then be stoic.
I mean, right. Come on. I mean, it's hard to win in the National Football League, and hard work, when it's rewarded with good performances and wins, you should be able to enjoy it. And I remember it going back to the Jaguars' first victory ever at Houston, and I made a play at the end of that game, caused a fumble. We got the ball back and then scored, and we won. And it was a game in which spent. I'm on the table after the game. I've got IV stuck in my arms because I was cramping up. And I've got a cigar in my mouth, and I am smoking it, okay? Victory cigar. Coughlin walks in and says, what are you doing with that thing in here? And I said, hey, coach, we won. Enjoy it.
Did he let it slide in that particular instance?
I didn't stop smoking my cigar,
all right.
I can tell you that. He would have to be a lot more manly than he was at that time to take that cigar out of my mouth.
I gotcha. Overall, though, what was his attitude like? And coaches that you played for throughout your career, is pretty much it? Is the 24-hour rule, how long has that thing been in effect?
I mean, the coaches have always, that's coach speak. I mean, they've been using it forever. They've got a term, I think, for everything in football. you know, I mean, think of all the different sayings. I mean, you go to that movie, you know, when Kevin Costner was the veteran guy with the minor league team, and he's back there talking to the pitcher, and he's giving them all the catchphrases when he goes to the big, right? I mean, it's no different in football. They've got all these sayings, and you're just like, come on, man. You know, can we be a little deeper than that, than to have all these sayings? You know, with coaches, they have all the sayings, and a lot of them apply. But at the same time, you've got to be able to live your life and enjoy things. So it's all good.
All right, Gus Bradley, scheduled to join us here any moment now. Ryan Robinson just went down the hall. See if he can grab the coach. He's going to pop in, hopefully, and here he comes. So we'll talk to him in just a few seconds and see if he'll stretch a 24-hour rule. Just a smidge, just for us, just today, as Gus Bradley joins us here. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you. Coach, congrats on the win, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. I got a million stats going through my head right now. But it's going great. You know, we're in heavy game planning right now, so good little break to come and visit with you guys.
Well, good, and we appreciate your time as always, man. And we understand the 24-hour rule, but I think even you, as you said after the game, not supposed to revel in every win, but this was one that you guys felt was probably overdue.
Well, I want to make sure our guys appreciate it. I mean, they have worked extremely hard and put a lot of energy and time into it. And to say, all right, good job, and then move on, I think they need to learn to appreciate all their efforts into it, and we do as a staff. And then it comes to a point in time when you say, all right, now we remember what got us to this point. We remember this feeling. Let's stay true to it, you know, as we go on and prepare for Miami.
The thing that I love the most was you had numerous players in that ball game that got injured and weren't looking to find a way to stay on the sideline. They were looking to find a way to get back on the field as soon as they could.
Well, you know what? I think that tells about their mindset, that just how mentally tough our guys are. And, you know, we see it every day in practice, their mental toughness. We see them, how they go about their task. And then to be able to demonstrate that on the field, it's not surprising to us, but something that, again, should be celebrated, their work ethic and the types of players we have.
Yeah, obviously a big loss with Paul Pozzozzi and Andre Branch. Both of these guys, hopefully Andre can come back before the season's over with. I know the NFL's all about next man up, but speak specifically about how you plan to deal with the absence of these guys if you can.
Well, I know the NFL has that mentality. Hey, next man up, we got to roll. And, you know, and that there's so much truth to that. But I don't want to take away or diminish the fact of how important those guys are to our team. I think that's a little bit of disservice to them in my eyes. So very important to our team. Puz, Brancher, I mean, just like Mercedes, I mean, they have tremendous value in many ways, not just as a player, but the mindset they bring and their professionalism. So we got stung a little bit because of these injuries. But with that being said, we challenge our guys to say, you know, you're defined as a leader by the ability for you to bring the next guy up, you know, and that's what Puz needs to do and has done, you know, with guys like JT and Jeremiah and those guys. You know, when they go in there and they step and they perform at a higher level, that's a credit to Puz and guys like that. So everybody has their role, and it doesn't stop now just because they're injured.
Going back to the preseason, JT Thomas was limited because of an injury, and then he had a limited opportunity to kind of show you guys, the staff, what he had to offer. And he did it at Mike. And he had, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought he had an MVP type of game, the game that he actually did play at that Mike position.
He really did. You know, now that you talk about that, it was that last game and he was going to play and he did perform at a high level. And I think we moved him up because of that performance. And we asked him to learn multiple positions. He's kind of our swing guy, has done that. And then he had a chance at the auto position and really captured that opportunity. And I think helped us as far as playing better defense.
At that auto position, you're not really required to direct a lot of traffic. Going to the Mike position, he's got to be that captain to get everybody lined up in that front seven. Is that something that JT can handle?
Well, that's his personality. I think, you know, that is an important position for us, and it's not just getting to the right gap and making the right drop. You're really setting up the whole defense. And we're fortunate that his personality will reflect that. He takes a lot of pride in it, and I know he's excited about this opportunity for him.
Head coach Gus Bradley here with us live on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Coach, the fans, I'm sure you guys as well, waiting for the running game to get going. All of a sudden, here it comes, right? 22 carries, 127 yards for Denard Robinson. Best game of his career. Offensive line had a very good game as well. We expect Denard will, you know, get the opportunity to show us that he can continue this. Got a question for you today on Twitter from Nathan Morris. He said, if he can continue to kind of be the lead guy, how, once everyone else is healthy, Toby comes back, how do those guys fit into the picture?
Well, it's, you know, if Toby, we'll take a look at him today and see if he'll be able to practice tomorrow. But if he comes in, then, you know, it'll be mostly Denard, and we'll take a good hard look at Toby and see where he's at health-wise. And, obviously, Jordan Tymon's got his role, and Storm is coming along. So we've got some decisions to make, but it'll be based off, you know, how Toby feels and where he's at.
With Andre Branch being out, and you guys go to that lightning package where Ryan Davis is the three technique, and you got Brancher and Clem at the defensive ends. How do you replace Brancher in that? Does Ryan Davis stay as a three? Chris Smith,
I can't tell you that. Jeez, man.
Well, I'm assuming.
Hey, you said you were limiting your questions to very broad.
I'm assuming, because at that point in the game when Branch got hurt, Dakota Watson got some reps as a defensive end, and I thought they were quality reps.
Well, I'm going to give you a very broad answer and say that's something that we're putting together now. But you're right, Dakota, you know, that's the out of position, is that we wanted to have a guy there that would have a trait other than just playing auto. Maybe he's an extra third down rusher. Maybe he's an extra, you know, linebacker that can play multiple positions. But he needs to have some trait, and that's what Dakota has. We feel like we really want to develop him to be that guy that, in a time of need, could be a third down rusher. And so we'll take a look at it. We've got some decisions to make. I know we moved Chris Smith up. So we'll take a look at him. But, you know, I would tell you, but it's, I think a lot of it has to do with how practice goes and where we're at and what we think. You know, we've got a couple days to kind of decide on that.
I'm glad he did it, not me. That's all I can say. Tell us, Gus, Blake Bortles dealing with adversity during the game. Obviously, you trust him to put the ball in his hands at the end of the first half, and you don't sit on it there. How did he deal with it throughout the game and since the game, his reaction to, you know, struggling a little bit, obviously?
Well, how about, you know, he's tremendous, man. A really strong competitor, really strong mindset. And, you know, I love that part of him. And I think we demonstrated that when we went back in there and had that two-minute drive, and we said, let's go. We've got tremendous faith in you. You know, there's some mistakes that were made, but learn from it, and let's move on. And that's what he does. Now, after the game, he'll go back and reflect on it. And I just see him, his mindset hasn't changed, his demeanor hasn't changed. He wants to get those things corrected, and that's the competitive spirit he has. And, you know, the team really feels him, and I think, you know, he'll just keep getting better and better.
As bad as a couple plays that he had and his reaction to those bad plays, but then after that, you never saw the body language linger.
He did, and I know he came off the sideline, and that was one thing that for me to see and watch, and he did. He handled it. I mean, here's a guy that he saw what happened on the sudden change of one of the interceptions where the defense held him, and he went down there and talked to the defense. And it wasn't like, hey, my bad, you know, I'm sorry I put you in that position. That's not his demeanor. He was just like, great job, and walked away. You know, and I think the defense feels that. They know, man, he's just chomping at the bit to get his next opportunity. But at the same time, he appreciates what they're doing and how they handle it.
Yeah, I think that's evident the way they play the defense throughout. It never really seemed like they're, man, really, come on, let's get going here. We need some help on the other side. They always kept them right there, quick change situations. The one time they scored on the turnover, Cleveland, they backed them up 5 yards on that play because they already took it over. I just think that does speak volumes to the fact that this team is pretty cohesive right now.
Well, and I think that's the mindset that we're looking for. And that's, you know, our language, the way we speak to the team. It's about, hey, every opportunity that comes up, every situation that comes up in a game, every down that comes up in a game, you got a chance to get better. You've got a chance to get better, and you have a chance to demonstrate you being at your best. So that's their mindset going in those situations. It's not, oh, here's a sudden change, oh, here's a fumble, because all that does is causes a distraction. It's purely about going out there and really have a chance to be their best. And I think as we learn this, those situations doesn't phase our team.
One guy that that I really enjoyed watching on film yesterday, and you made just a brief mention of him in your press conference yesterday, Avery Jones. I think there was like four or five tackles that he had in the run game, and then people, and I reminded everybody here on this show here, that Avery Jones was the one who got the pressure on the Telvin Smith interception. I thought he had an exceptional game.
He's really grown. Now, he's a classic example of our team, I think, where you see him in the beginning of the year and you're going, okay, why is he getting so many reps? Why is he getting 25, 30 reps? And he might make a mistake here and there. And we're saying, all right, we're willing to live with this as long as you keep showing us you're growing, as long as you keep showing that you're getting better, because in the long run, it's going to make us even stronger. Kind of like Telvin Smith. It made some mistakes early, but stick with them, help them, keep learning, and then eventually we get a guy that's showing more consistency. And that's what Avery's doing. And, you know, because we've got a lot of defensive linemen playing now, it's helped that position stay strong.
How long did Dave Caldwell have to keep convincing you and Todd Walsh on Avery Jones? Because when he first got here, he was coming off of an ankle injury. But Dave is a guy that saw him back when he was probably a junior before the ankle injury, and probably is telling you, be patient, Gus. Trust me, we saw something with this guy at Georgia back before he had the injury.
Well, that's why it's so important to have communication. And between our scouts and Dave and our staff, he did do that, and he felt very strongly about him. And I think it's a credit not only to Dave but Todd Walsh to say, okay, I trust you. Let's keep working with him, and let's keep building this guy and see what we got here. And doesn't take too long to see some of his traits that you're excited about him.
A final thought for you, Gus, and we appreciate your time again. The fans have been hungry. I'm sure the players have as well, and you and the coaching staff, just to see those results start to pay off in the win-loss column. What was the atmosphere like with the support you got on Sunday?
Well, you know what? I think I've heard some of the interviews, and I've heard a lot of our players talk. They were asked a question, and before they even answered the question, they talked about our fan base and just how important it was. And it was genuine, and it was so true. I mean, the excitement to see our fans and to see the excitement, enthusiasm they bring, we feed off of that. So that part was unbelievable. Then the locker room, great atmosphere, and I think it's important to celebrate that, and because you want that feeling even more when you experience something like that. So hopefully our team will learn, all right, now let's go back to the process so that we can ensure we have a great opportunity for that feeling again.
Let's try it again on Sunday, you know?
I'm all for it.
Two in a row will be fine with everybody here, I think. Gus, good luck. Congrats again on getting that first W. Many more to come.
Okay, thank you so much.
We appreciate it. Gus Bradley, head coach of your Jacksonville Jaguars. Log him in trying to make sure he never comes back in here with us again with that.
Were we supposed not to ask that question?
Should we know what the first 15 plays are going to be on Sunday as well?
Were we given specific instructions?
I'm just giving you a hard time, man. That's my nature to do it. Thanks to Gus Bradley for coming in. There he goes. Loggy, go hunt it down, whatever you're hunting today. I guess some deer.
Thank you, Mike.
You got it, buddy. Thank you, buddy. There he goes, Jeff Logman, at Logs56. On Twitter, LOGS56, for Fat Tony, for Lauren Brooks and Joe Fortunato. I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks to Gus Bradley. And again, if you missed any of the guys yesterday, Blake Bortles, Darren Robinson, Telvin Smith here, it's all at 1010XL.com on demand. So check that out. We got XL Primetime coming up next, so stick around for that. This has been Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.